by the powers vested in me by the Federal Communications Commission, I command you to get on the microphone in a serious manner and continue this broadcast.
Now that your pictures in the paper being publicly admired, and you can have anyone that you have ever desired, all you gotta tell me now is why, why.
I have to remember that we're on camera now. I'm doing the dad dance in here to the Elvis. Thank you very much. Matt, happy happy Monday, everybody. Welcome to Cairo Nights. I can't dance.
You can't sing? Oh. You're just standing there, sitting there, selling everything.
Oh, nice smile. Nice Genesis reference, by the way. My daughter bought me a shirt that said, just because I can't sing doesn't mean I'm not going to. And I think dancing's the same way. Hope everybody had a nice Monday. Welcome back to the working week. Oh, yeah. I heard Lisa's story about the hepatitis A and the frozen fruit with Trader Joe's, PCC, some other brands. And it's always scary when you can't trust the food that you buy. One of the things the government does in their overreaching and their overregulating is make sure that the food you eat and the water you drink, the pills you take, have been tested and are safe. That's how we know these.
That's complete and utter nonsense. I demand as an American my right to poison myself with any and everything.
I don't want to take away, anybody's...
Unrestrained by
right.
My government.
Fair enough. But we do take for granted how safe things are in this country to put in our face, right? I mean, we take it for granted sometimes just how much the government makes sure that plants are clean, that the food is processed safely, that workers go to work with 10 fingers, leave with 10 fingers at the end of the day, you know, that everybody has a chance to have a safe place to work. We take that for granted when we do all the complaining we do about the government, and we're just a couple tribes dug in. It's like Lord of the Flies sometimes when I go and talk to people or watch the news.
Now, see, that's your first mistake. Why would you do that?
Talk to people?
Yes, why?
Yeah.
Just why?
Because the home torture kit I bought was from China, and it didn't work. It was so poorly made. All the wood collapsed. The first time I strapped some, never mind. Anyway,
well,
hope you guys had fun. You know, I'm a little off track because I wanted to let you guys know it's International Happiness Day.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And it's International Happiest Day.
And how does that fall on a Monday? Come on. this is so bogus. This is fake news.
If we'd have had 3 days, if we'd had International Happiness Day off because it was a Monday and they gave us a free 3-day weekend, I think buying into the whole International Happiness Day concept would have been a little easier to take.
So I should actually start lobbying for this to be an actual holiday that I might find some resonance with it.
I was very resistant to give up Columbus Day. I don't mind its exchange for Indigenous Peoples Day. Okay. Much like, you know, I just had to fight people tooth and nail to defend St. Patrick's Day last week, right? It's turned into, who is it? Bill Maher called it a drunk Christmas, right?
I'm not seeing the problem here, but go on.
You got to be careful making Irish jokes these days. You know, I mean, who was it that got in so much trouble on, Saturday Night Live, right? The night before the Oscars, they had their Saturday Night Live cold open. And they had two actors playing Brendan Gleeson and Colin Farrell, you know, doing the red carpet thing and Saturday Night Live's cold open. And they had both the actors, Mikey Day, and I forget the other cast member, but they're doing this Irish gibberish, and they capped with, they haven't even started drinking yet. Then you get Jimmy Kimmel up on stage saying we've got 5 Irish actors nominated tonight, which doubled the chances for a fight to break out anytime. Right. So here's
Liam, Irish, and I think that's fine.
I didn't mind it, but here's Liam Neeson speaking up saying, it's a little bit bigoted. It's a little bit racist to say that about the Irish, to assume the easy, lazy. It's the lazy Irish joke. Drunken and fighting. Mommy, are we Irish? Shut up and drink your whiskey. You know, let me know. Those lazy, easy jokes.
Sorry, I was just having childhood flashbacks. I'll be all right momentarily.
As soon as I finish this, Guinness, I'm going to beat the crap out of you. Right. Those are easy. Those are lazy. And We wouldn't do that about other races. You know, Saturday Night Live wouldn't have done that about African Americans. Wouldn't have been anti-Semitic in their humor. Probably wouldn't have done that with a couple of Latin Americans coming down the red car, the champagne carpet this year. They thought maybe people would be nicer to each other if the carpet wasn't red. Like, the color of the carpet was the problem. Why were such buttheads to each other? You know? Anyway, it is International Happiness Day. Because National Happiness Day in America, God, we wouldn't make it till noon. The way we're at each other's throats these days, we just...
Well, in the American concept, too, other people from other countries can't be happy because they're not Americans, man.
it's National Americans Deserve to Be Happy Day. That's what it is. Yeah, it is. It's easy to be happy. I say that, you know, with no regard whatsoever for the poor folks.
But it is hard to write happy. Like, it is much easier to write sad songs or sad poetry than to write happy songs that don't come across as cliches. Mm. And I will die on that hill.
You're probably spot on with that. I mean, outside of Shiny Happy People, it's hard to think of a good happy song.
That was sarcastic, I think.
Happy Together is a good song, right? You're right, though. Misery breeds good art. You know, Van Gogh didn't paint about how he bought a new hat that made his ears look cute. He painted chopping his own ear off, right? Because he did chop his own ear off. The guy was mentally unbalanced. I love Van Gogh, but I'm getting far afield here. It is International Happiness
Day. Hey, I heard some radio that would put me in borderline wanting to chop my ear off, too, after 20 years in this business. So I can understand.
You know, that's another reason why we have to celebrate International Happiness Day. There's money to be made in aggravating people, dividing people. You know, there's a lot of money to be made in...
Where, Spike? Where? Tell me where. I need to know.
It's easy to... We've talked about this before. Why isn't there good, you know, happy radio? I think Jack Stein mentioned this this station. Oh, no, I was on with Jack, and John Curley was doing the crossover from the 12 to 3 midday show to John and Cherry. And John said there was a station that tried to do all happy news. They lasted less than 2 weeks. Before they realized their numbers were tanking. It's human nature, and I'll tell you one of the reasons why. John hit on it a little bit. People need to see others unhappy, and that that reminds them that at least it's not them. There's a certain level of, you know, some people take great joy in seeing other people miserable. That's a Schadenfreude, and they believe they call that psychological phenomenon, about the reveling in others' misery. Well, it's not so much that you enjoy seeing other people miserable, but when you see misery and it's not you, it kind of put things in perspective that, hey, at least you're not that guy. You know, at least your home wasn't raided by the FBI. You know, at least you didn't have to pay hush money for your extramarital affairs. At least you're not going to get indicted tomorrow. But I'm not talking about politics. I'm talking about happiness tonight. According to this study of International Happiness, based on a handful of factors, the usual factors, health, social economic standing, income, the things that lack thereof can really torpedo your happiness. Finland is the number one happiest place on earth for the sixth straight year. I mean, the happiest place on earth for six straight, and Disney's taking them to court. Because I think Disney registered that they're the happiest place on earth. They've got lawyers that will tell Finland to back off. I'm kidding. USA 15th globally in happiness. And you can take that for what it's worth. Happiness is a relative term. And it's about perspective. I mentioned the news and how people, you know, like to see others doing worse than they are. That's a perspective issue, right? You've got a house that needs work, but at least you're not the guy living in his car or on the street or under a bridge, right? We can all complain about, I wish I had more. I wish I made more. I wish my kids were better looking, whatever the problem might be, right? Everyone out there wishes they were doing better than somebody else, but we're really doing better than most everybody else, especially as Americans. We are in the top 1% of the nation, of the world, I should say. Americans have it better than most of the planet. We've got first world problems. Your cable out, his roof's out. You know, I mean, the garbage, you didn't get the garbage out in time and you missed your garbage pickup this week. Those folks live in a landfill. I mean, it's all about perspective, getting a global perspective on how great we have it in America. That's probably the greatest gift I've ever been given is the gift of international travel through my friends at World Vision. I've mentioned them a lot because they're worth mentioning. They're a nonprofit Christian-based organization based here in the Northwest out of Federal Way, and their mission is to make sure kids have clean water to drink. A secondary major goal of theirs is to make sure that women have access to quality of life and success on the same scale with men. Now, you know, what they do particularly with water is life. A lot of places in the world, you know, it's a 5 to 10 mile hike to get clean water every day just so the families don't dehydrate to death. And World Vision will come in and put a well in. They'll put a well in and give a whole community clean water. And then when the after shot of that is when the young girls of the village, because the boys go to school in most third world villages. I've been to Africa, Senegal, Zambia. I've been to up the Amazon River on a medical boat. I've been to Bangladesh, the most densely populated place on earth, Dhaka, plus the outlying areas of Bangladesh. Been to the Dominican Republic. Been in 5 different continents, World Vision. Girls are literally second-class citizens in a large portion of the world. Talk about International Women's Day last month, about how important that was. A couple weeks ago is all. How important that was. Because there are places where when the girls don't have to go get water, they get to go to school too. And that's not even an option in a lot of places in the world. So when you look at America and how much we've progressed as a nation because we've worked together as a nation, how great we have it as a nation, it's easy to feel happiness. There was a trip to the White House today by the cast of, you know, Ted Lasso, right? I guess it's an HBO show or is it a Netflix show? Where's Ted Lasso even at? I got blocked by a...
I believe it's on Apple TV.
Apple TV. Thank you. Thank you. I got blocked by a firewall trying to link up to that story. So I apologize for that, folks. I'm going to try to just do this out of memory. The cast of Ted Lasso, Jason Sudeikis. It's a show about an America. It's a fish out of water format, which we've all seen 1,000 times. Fish out of water, one of the oldest comedy tropes of all time. Ted Lasso is an American who's coaching a British soccer team, and it's a very, very funny show, but it's a show that's very successful because it's a show with a heart, and it's about the reason that the cast of Ted Lasso was at the White House today was to speak about mental health and about asking for help, how important it is to ask for help with regard to mental health. You know, the cast of Ted Lasso, that show is all about, he's a good egg. I don't know how else to describe this. He doesn't fit into their world, but he's got this down-home, spun country wisdom, and he cares about people. He cares about his team and the management of the club and his community, and that's what's out of water in the arena of professional football or soccer, as it's called over there in the UK. I mean, that's what's fish out of water, is the humanity of this coach in an arena that's just all about wins and losses and nothing else matters. He puts his players' well-being above that, and there's rewards. It's a multi-level fish out of water show. And, you know, when we talk about happiness, we're talking about our mental health. We're talking about, I say decide to be happy, and I know there are folks who deal with depression and anxiety, and it's not just a matter of deciding to be happy. It's not. I understand it's more than that. A lot of times there are pharmaceutical solutions to chronic unhappiness, chronic depression, anxiety, all these issues. A lot of times it's a mental, it's an imbalance, a chemical imbalance in the brain. It's not something you can just decide to do. But I think perspective is something you can decide to have. You can decide. You ever heard the statement, whether you think you're right or you think you're wrong, you're halfway there? I mean, because you decide. You decide what kind of day you're going to have when you get out of bed. That's very, very, I probably blew that quote, right?
No, I just think it's completely bogus. I think it's wrong. Absolutely. People don't choose the factors that make their lives hard. They don't choose their depression or their state of mind, or even most cases, they don't choose their economic situation.
This is all true. That's all very fair. And I'm oversimplifying. in a situation where we're talking about mental health and happiness that deserves to be discussed with well-informed points of view. You're right. People cannot choose their situation. But they, I mean, and I know it's very elementary and base to say that you can choose how you let your situation dictate your mood. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm to a fault optimistic and cheery. You know, and maybe it's the global perspective I've had of seeing what other people in other countries have to go through. I've seen folks living in just absolute poverty, abject poverty, absolute squalor, where folks don't know where their next clean water or meal is coming from, but they do just appreciate what they do have as opposed to what they don't have. I'm a glass half full kind of guy. And I know that that's me. I'm lucky to feel that way. I get it. I'm very lucky to feel that way. A lot of folks will, no matter what they have, they're never happy. If you probably know somebody like that, right? Somebody that you look up and say, man, you got it all, and you're never happy. What's it going to take to make you happy? And for those people, I say, look, just take a moment and appreciate what you do have as opposed to bemoaning what you don't. And Matt, you're right. I appreciate you calling me out. That you can't just decide, you know, I don't have any money, rent's due, my kids are sick, but I'm going to decide to make it a zippity-doo-dah, sunshine on my bunghole day. You can't, it's not fair. It's not realistic. Just count your blessings when you do have them, I guess, is what I'm trying to say on International Day of Happiness. You know, we're 15th in the nation, worst is Afghanistan. You know who's happier today than they were in 2015? Ukraine. There was a sense of pessimism in Ukraine when Russia took Crimea from Ukraine. There was less of the happiness index in 2015 than there is in Ukraine today, based upon the fact that Ukraine is fighting and fighting back and holding on to sovereignty and rallying around each other and accepting help and support from the rest of the world. And I know it's hard to believe, but Ukraine is happier today when they're at war with Russia than they were in 2015 when they just lost to such another country, Russia. All right, I'll shut up. Thanks, Matt. So it's going to be that was our happiness break. The rest of the show, it's Misery Town. We're going to complain about everything. Me and Matt Butler. No, we're not. Appreciate you, brother. It's Cowboy Nights. I'm Spike O'Neill with Matt Butler. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Cairo Nights. Nice choice, Matt Butler. Dear friend of mine, this is their very favorite Fleetwood Mac song. So it's a time of year when a certain group of people gets to break away from it all and head down to someplace warm and sunny and revel and relax and socialize and party and just let their hair down, exhale. Of course, I'm talking about spring break. Spring break season, after the horrific international incident in Mexico a week or so ago, when those citizens that went down for cosmetics tourism, medical tourism, I guess it is, were ambushed or caught up in a really not clear what happened down there. Folks were caught up in kind of a cartel dust up and ended up two were killed. Two were taken hostage since returned. Wish them a complete recovery and our thoughts and prayers to the victims. But there was a decree from, I think, Greg Abbott, governor of Texas, for his young adults, his college students in Texas, not to vacation in spring break in Mexico. So it just wasn't safe. And I think the mayor of Miami would put his city on the list.
I wonder if Greg Abbott would have told Ted Cruz not to vacation in Cancun.
I think he would have told him to wear,
given travel warnings.
I think he would have told him to wear a mask or at least a fake nose and mustache going through the airport and not to do interviews as his state froze in the middle of an epic cold front. Yeah, that was a mess. So the whole concept of spring break is, it's a rite of passage. It's a privileged experience for very few of us. Most people, especially during tough economic times, don't have the means and wherewithal to go, you know, a spring break from college. I mean, spring break is designed around the break between, I guess, semesters of young college life, whether it's quarters or semesters, whatever system your particular higher learning institute is on. My youngest child just had spring break for the last week. They've been home, which meant a lot of sleeping in and doing laundry at my place, which is nice. Their friends, though, my youngest friends go up to Western up in Bellingham, and they have spring break this week. So it kind of floats around between different institutions so that every kid in America isn't looking for a hotel room in Miami Beach this particular week. But it is spring break in Miami, and it was off to a horrific start last Friday. There was a shooting, and on Sunday morning, like 3 a.m., there was a second shooting in Miami. And it's gotten just out of hand in recent years, so much so that the mayor of Miami, Mayor Dave Gelber, is calling for a curfew from Thursday night at midnight until Friday morning. I think it's a midnight till 6 a.m. curfew, Thursday night, Friday morning, and then Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Midnight to 6 a.m. Unless you're a local who's going to or from work, you cannot be on the streets of Miami Beach during spring break. Because it's just mayhem. There's always far too many people. There's far too much drinking and debauchery. And I understand kids are going to be kids, and that's what you do. You go down and you have a little fun. You let off some steam because you've been working hard. You know, you're in college. It's supposed to be a fun time of your life, but it's a very stressful time of your life. A lot of your future success is dictated by how seriously you take your studies. And there's kind of a pendulum swing, a yin and yang. The harder you study, the harder you probably need to let off steam. But I think the youth of today isn't the youth of 10, 20, 30 years ago. I mean, it's easy to say that that's the case.
No, they're more ignorant, less active, and less culturally engaged. They're a great generation.
Yeah. You're welcome, by the way, Matt. You're welcome. I raised some of that generation. You know, because that was my first take, too. On this, why are kids today so different than kids of just, let's say, 20 years ago? I think there's a genuine disrespect for each other, genuine disrespect for authority, for the rule of law. But Jack Stein pointed out to me, there's also the pressure of social media. I mean, people, when I was a kid, we did stupid stuff. That was kind of a byproduct of partying too hard, having too much fun, getting a little too loose. It seems that doing stupid stuff and then recording it and sharing it isn't an afterthought. It's more of a primary goal. You know, there's a video going around of a cop car in Miami Beach, and a bunch of kids there's hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people in the street everywhere in Miami Beach, Florida, and all Florida coastal cities. I don't want to pick out Miami Beach in particular, but the article I'm referring to did quote the mayor directly saying, we're not going to have it anymore. We don't want it. We didn't ask for it. We can't police it. We can't keep it safe. We'd rather you didn't come to Miami Beach for your spring break. Well, there's a video of these kids, in the street, and they surround a cop car, and all of a sudden, they start chanting, spring break, spring break, spring break. They jump on top of this cop car and start bouncing up and down. Well, there's now a rule in Florida where wokeness and common sense go to die, that if you're in a car and you feel threatened, you have the right to drive yourself out of that situation to safety. And if someone is injured or, heaven forbid, killed, you've got a legal defense that you felt your life was being threatened. So the video is not just, kids bouncing up and down on top of cop car because they know the cops don't have the resources to lock them all up. And they just start jumping up and down on this cop car, trashing this cop car. And the cop, fearing for his safety, drives through it and injures kids and with the cop car. That's kind of what we've devolved into. And the one thing you see more than people jumping up and down in a cop car is you see people filming it and posting it. You know, I mean, there's always been kids who drink too much. There's always been cases of alcoholic poisoning or accidents caused by inebriation, whether they're, you know, driving in a car, riding on a bike, falling off a balcony, whatever it is. It's usually inebriation that leads to it. Nowadays, it's like stupid human tricks. People filming themselves doing just idiotic things to go after hits and likes and whatnot on their social media accounts. I just wonder if we've gotten to a point in society where we can't be trusted to have fun and not go too far. And not I don't just point out kids. Look at anybody that wins a Super Bowl or an NHL, you know, a Stanley Cup or an NBA final. The city goes bananas. It's, you know, oftentimes cop cars are flipped over, set on fire, light poster pulled down, whatever else. You know, there was a film of people in Philadelphia when the Eagles won the championship. I think it was 2-3 years ago they won their title. And people are climbing on the awnings of downtown, like apartment and office buildings, and like bringing them down. And just it's just mayhem. And then there's, you know, always the liquor gets involved and there might be a window or two smashed. Maybe a little looting takes place. Maybe some fires get lit, all in the name of you. Go Flyers. Go Eagles. So it's not just the kids. We can't be trusted to get in large groups, and whether we're protesting or celebrating, people tend to use, I think maybe that's part of our human nature these days too. People use the cover of large gatherings to just take idiotic chances and do idiotic things. You know, you're in the middle of a huge crowd in town. No one's going to know it was you. Just throw something through that store window. What the hell? It's just like, you're ruining it for everybody. All we wanted to do was look at girls in bikinis and have a beer or 12. Now you guys
do that at home online. Stay the heck out of Florida.
You know, virtual spring breaking, Matt. I think that's what we got to put together. There's a website that can make us rich and famous. It's Cairo Nights. Oh, speaking of rich and famous, and speaking of you know, sins of the flesh, a Seattle landmark went dark recently, and it's been bought. It may be back. I'll tell you about it next. This is a very appropriate song, Matt. Welcome back to Cairo Nights. Matt, I know you're semi-new to town. Speaking of semis, are you familiar with the Lusty Lady on First Avenue?
I am. Wasn't that like a cooperatively owned, like a worker-owned gentleman's club, so to speak?
Yeah, that's the kindest and most professional way to put that. It was your show bar, I guess, you know, strip club. There's a lot of names for it. A peep show. Now, peep show is a little bit different because I'm no expert, but there are booths at a peep show, and folks will go into a private booth and pay money to have a curtain opened or a screen lifted so they can watch a dancer in the comfort and privacy of their own little booth. But the Lusty Lady closed down, I think it was 2015. It was a real loss in Seattle, not because we don't have enough adult entertainment in town, but because the marquee out front of the Lusty Lady become internationally legendary. I mean, legendary. You could always count on the marquee of the Lusty Lady to have something provocative and creative and funny. Well, in a cosmic twist of fate, Andrew Conroe, a Seattle entrepreneur who has made his wealth in adult online entertainment, and a host of early web businesses, he's purchased the Lusty Lady Building in downtown Seattle. A guy who comes from inside the family, I guess you'll say. Kunru acquired earlier this month the former home of the famed Peep Show for $3 million as a gift to the city. He said in an interview on Friday. This is from Margot Van Singel of the Seattle Times. Says that Kunru, the founder of adult entertainment and social networking company Friend Finder Networks, plans to restore the vacant property at 1315 First Ave and use it to enliven the city's downtown. I want to create something that brings joy to the people of Seattle and perhaps be a destination to the millions who visit. While the Puget Sound Business Journal originally reported that a mystery buyer wanted to turn the building into a museum, Kunru is keeping his options open, and he wants Seattleites, you and me, to vote on what they'd like to see in the space. He goes, I don't have that much of an ego, so to say that I know exactly what would be best for the city, I don't know. We're in the brainstorming phase. In fact, Kunru has built a website, lustylady.com, where people can pick between options. On hot pink buttons displayed options like hotel, strip club, restaurant, museum, retail store.
Interestingly, affordable housing, not one of the options.
Well, it's affordable housing, but only for like 5 minutes at a time. Sorry, I couldn't resist. That was just such a layup. It is nice to see that we cannot take ourselves too seriously as a city, you know, and something that is, you know, controversial to say the least, a peep show, an adult entertainment facility, merits remembering.
Why would anybody play this rich dude's game? Like, why are we playing the game where we're just going to feed his insecure desire for attention, where he wants to get people on a website and vote, and then he's going to do whatever the heck he wants anyway? Why do we play into this thing where people with money get to wave it around and go, look at me, look at me?
Boy, maybe, what if the leading vote getter actually happens? Am I naive?
Then I'll eat a brick.
God love you, buddy. I'm going to take the guy at face value because I'm afraid to have him turn around. And maybe he'll do what he says. And the good news is, though, that the building isn't going to be, it's not going to be, you know, a hiking outfitter's store. I got nothing against the great outdoors. And like 8 stories of residential condos upstairs. At least we're going to get a little bit of our culture back, the seedy underbelly of our belly of our culture back in Seattle. You know, the Lusty Lady Marquise. I mean, I've got a list of some of the best ones here. Clash of the Tight Buns, you know? I mean, Dangerous Curve's Head, Happy Spanksgiving. All clothes, 100% off, limited time only. I love that kind of stuff. Pirates Keep Their Booty Here. You know, Thanks for the Memories when they were closing up. The Devil Wears Nada. You know, We Have Coffee, There's Always Room for Cream. I mean, some of these are just fun and smart, you know? Some of these I can't. It's funny. All of these were on the streets of Seattle on First Avenue, right? I'm afraid to read some of these on air, and I shouldn't be, right? I mean, if they're safe for the public streets, shouldn't they be safe for me to tell the audience, to share with the audience? I'm not willing to risk my career to read some of these to you. My favorite is, we take off more than Boeing. Visit the Lusty Lady. I hope, you know, Matt, you're probably right. You usually are in these kind of moments. I'm the naive guy who wants to hope for the best. Remember, I told you I was painfully optimistic. I'll say the bra's half full, not half empty on this one, okay? Maybe Sam Kunru will do what he says and let us, the city, decide what's to become of our gaudy pink marquee landmark, the Lusty Lady on First Avenue. It's just nice to see it not demoed and made into another yuppie habit trail, the last thing we need. It's Kyra Knights. I'm Spike, and that's Matt. We'll be right back.